Welcome to another episode of What Matters in North Carolina. As always, I'm your host, Matt Calder, and on today's show, we will be talking with Brooke Medina of the Civitas Institute about her most recent article about the part of the Toxic Agenda series we talked about last week with Brian Balfour. We'll be talking about her article on abortion and really digging down into a little of the history behind abortion, actually, and kind of bearing out some things you don't really see when you're just catching the 30-second news clips or the taglines of whether you're pro-abortion or anti-abortion, what you'll usually kind of see brought up to beyond the my body, my choice or you know, right to life or the different taglines. She really digs down into a lot more than just that. But before we get to that, of course, this show, as all of our shows are, is sponsored by the Civitas Institute. That is North Carolina's conservative voice. And you can find out more about the Civitas Institute at nccivitas.org. Also want to make a quick mention of the Civitas Leadership Conference, CLC, coming up in the next few months. And their tickets for that are going to be going on sale very soon. But if you want to find out a little more about that event, you can go to civitasclc.com. Again, that is civitasclc.com. Now, also, we want you to go on the website and go to our website for the show, freedomactionnetwork.com. Check out some of the older episodes of this show on the Freedom Action Network. There's tons and tons of backlogged archives there for you to check out. And if you're hearing the show on the radio waves, on FM or AM, then you're hearing it in a way that you don't have to. You don't have to sit down at that certain time and listen to the show. You can go to freedomactionnetwork.com and listen to the most recent episode and past episodes, or you can subscribe to the show by going onto your phone and searching What Matters in North Carolina. You can subscribe to the podcast and you'll get the show to your device automatically there. But we also want you to go on social media and check out what we've got going on. That's on Facebook and Twitter at What Matters NC on Facebook and Twitter. And we want you to use, again, our call-in line as well. If you've been listening to the show, you know, 919-747-8063. Again, that's 919-747-8063. Call in, leave us a message about something you'd like us to talk about or something we did talk about you have an opinion on. Keep it clean and concise, about a minute or two. And if it's good, we'll put it on the air. So you can say, hey, this is Matt from Clayton, and I heard that segment you had with Brooke Medina on abortion, and well, I think this. And go for it. And again, that number is 919-747-8063. So without any further ado, we'll get to our segment with Brooke Medina. Brooke, thanks for coming back on the show.
Glad to be here, Matt.
So we are going to, I guess this is kind of a part two segment, or part two of a highlighting the Civitas Institute's Toxic Agenda series that's going on. And as we talked last time with Brian Balfour about his article on Medicaid reform, and we of course said the Toxic Agenda series is highlighting a range of different topics that are kind of wish list items of the left, is the kind of the way I tried to explain it. And I said, you know, these are all sorts of different topics, and your topic today definitely shows the difference, because, you know, we're going from Medicaid to abortion as the topic. And I guess kind of open us up and tell us a little about your most recent piece on the Civitas website.
Great. Yes. So like you said, the Toxic Agenda, is the basically an exposure of the left's agenda here in the state. Should they be back in power and have the ability to craft legislation to their liking? And from the Medicaid expansion aspect, which, you know, really redistributes things in a way that is supposedly equitable and egalitarian, but truly isn't, because of the long-term consequences of handling our citizens' finances that way, to the way in which we treat and approach women's rights. And that's what I wanted to focus on in this article, was how under this guise of women's rights, we have certain legislators within the General Assembly that are seeking to expand abortion. And this isn't just some minor little expansion. If you read the text in the bills, both the Senate Bill 588 and House Bill 563, both presented this past April, when you read the text of it, it becomes really revealing as to what their long-term goals are. And really, it's an expansion of late-term abortions. it's entitled the Whole Woman's Health Act, and some listeners might, if they follow this sort of social policy, they might recognize the name because it comes from the Supreme Court case, which was Whole Woman's Health versus Hellerstedt, which was a case wherein Texas went to fought against Whole Woman's Health regarding abortionist admitting privileges in the state of Texas. So the North Carolina legislators that crafted this bill decided that they would attach that name, which was the nod to that Texas case, to the North Carolina legislation. However, this legislation doesn't really have much to do with admitting privileges in the state of North Carolina for abortionists. This is really an expansion of late-term abortions past the 20-week mark.
And, I mean, just pausing real quick, that's, I mean, that right now that's halfway through a pregnancy. So 20 weeks, that's halfway through a pregnancy. And there are people who want to push further. Yeah. I mean, it's...
It is unconscionable. It is absolutely egregious. And for them to... But see, this is part of the problem with the whole current women's rights movement, is that they have hitched it to this belief that abortion is a fundamental right for women, and women have to be empowered through access to abortion. And I mean, that's priority number one, is actually destroying that false dichotomy that women are in opposition to their children, and that the only children that are worthy of living are the ones that are wanted children, or children that are free of disabilities. You know, we've seen in, I think, was it Sweden? They virtually have eradicated Down syndrome, and they're praising that advancement in science, supposedly, and advancement in health. But really what that means is that they have aborted nearly all the Down syndrome babies in this past generation. So, you know, there are so many moral issues that are underlying this, this assertion that abortion rights equal women's rights. And the legislation, this Whole Woman's Health Act in North Carolina, this is the tip of the iceberg as far as really what is wrong with the whole abortion, pro-abortion movement. And that doesn't even delve into the aspect of that. I do cover my article with regard to 20 weeks being the gestational age that doctors can presently confirm that babies feel pain. And so this isn't just removing pregnancy tissue, as Planned Parenthood says on their website when they're describing a DNE abortion, which is the kind of abortion that is performed in the later part of women's pregnancies. This is, and I'm going to warn your listeners, this is very difficult to listen to. It was difficult to write, but this is the reality of what's going on. A DNE abortion, which is what this whole Women's Health Act would have sought to expand, involves dismembering the baby's appendages and midsection and later crushing his or her skull while using a suction device to remove the brain.
Yeah, and I mean, that's taking the arms and legs off of a baby, breaking the baby in half and pulling the baby out, breaking the skull and pulling the baby out. That's what that is.
Yep, that is. But Planned Parenthood refers to that as removing pregnancy tissue.
Well, they don't want the truth about what it is to be out there for everyone to see. I mean, that's obvious, right, from the way everything's been treated. I mean, the whole, they call it a cluster of cells early on in the pregnancy. It's just an unformed cluster of cells or something in that. And they
sterilize it so that there is no emotional bond there. But regardless of whether or not they acknowledge that emotional bond, it is there. There are plenty of studies out there that talk about the connection between mother and baby, even from the very early stages of pregnancy. And that doesn't really change regardless of how the baby was conceived, whether or not the baby is wanted. I mean, those are psychological things that need to be addressed on a societal level. There's no amount of legislation that can make somebody love a child. That has to come from society and a push toward us accepting both mother and baby post-delivery as well. That's something that pro-lifers get disparaged a lot about. We are told oftentimes that we are only pro-life before birth and we don't care about families after birth, which is completely incorrect. I know so many pro-lifers throughout the U.S. and the ones that I see, I mean, they're running adoption clinics. They're the ones that are taking in and fostering and adopting. So, I mean, I throw the flag on that anyways, but just the most concerning thing I think that our listeners need to take away from this legislation is that this is not about women's rights. This is about expanding and advancing an agenda that lines the pockets of people like Planned Parenthood and other pro-abortion groups, and allows legislators and pro-abortion champions to paint themselves as saviors for low-income women, minority women, because that is those are the groups in society that abortion most adversely affects. I mean, abortion affects the most. Abortion adversely affects the child 100% of the time, but these abortions are specifically targeted to those segments of society. And, you know, we don't hear the left talking about that a lot. You know, they claim to be for poor people's rights, minority rights, but yet they're advancing the abortions, you know, the aborting of this next generation of that same segment of society.
Right. And I mean, so obviously the number one party that loses out in an abortion is the child. So that's obvious. I mean, there's a life being lost, and this is an unpopular thing to talk about, and I think a lot of people don't want to talk about it. But also the father loses out in that. I mean, there is no right for the father at all in this process. And you know, so feminism is about, you know, first wave feminism was about equality, was about equal treatment for women, you know, in that
voting rights, education, yes, rights, things like that. Yeah.
And that's an equal footing. But when you get to like second wave feminism, and that's where you have like the abortion rights, that type of argument, mm-hmm, feminism, the Margaret Sanger,
yeah,
those,
mm-hmm, they co-opted the original feminist movement.
Right. And so, yeah, you've got, that's not about equality, because there is no equality for the father. The father can't say, don't get an abortion. The father can't say, you can't kill my child. There's no right. The father can't make you get an abortion as well. Mm-hmm. If you are pro-abortion, the father can't say, well, you have to get rid of the baby. The mother has the decision there. Mm-hmm. And up to the point of the father can't and wash his hands of the baby, saying, I want to abort the baby, you don't want to abort the baby, I'm not involved anymore. Like, and I'm not saying what should be happened, should be allowed to, but there's nothing there. There's no right for the fathers there. There's no equality in that.
And that's an important point to make. And you know what? The response from pro-abortion advocates is, my body, my choice. Unfortunately, they fail to recognize
it's a baby's body.
There is another body inside of that body. And so they are two separate entities. So we're not talking about just a cluster of cells or some lung tissue or liver tissue that a woman is trying to get rid of. This is another human being from the point of conception. And so I, you know, discuss
that.
The science totally bears that out. And we would treat any other sort of organism differently than we're treating unborn babies. It's incredible and absolutely unconscionable. I've said that before, but there's very little other ways to describe the severity of what this faulty logic has led to ever since Roe v. Wade. Now, there were abortions prior to Roe v. Wade. I mean, I was in my research, I've been tracing even just the history of abortion in ancient Greece. Aristotle talks about abortion. He was pro-abortion. He was also pro-slavery and pro-infanticide. So, I mean, we can't, even though we got many very great ideas on theories of government from him, there, even from that stage, there was a reckoning that needed to happen with regard to how society treated innocent lives. And I would say there was a huge turn when the Romans took over and Christianity became a prominent form of thought within society in the West, and that advanced the belief in individual rights to include the rights of the unborn. So there's a long history that America needs to deal with regard to the treatment of others, from the way we treated slaves to the way we treat the unborn nowadays. And we need voices out there that are willing to take this on and be fearless and stand up against this sort of legislation. These legislators knew this wasn't going to pass in the Republican-led General Assembly, but the ACLU of North Carolina has vowed that they are going to continue to pursue the Whole Women's Health Act for years to come.
Right, and I mean, just, we've talked about it a little before, but jumping back to the science of it, I mean, I have a line, like a litany of pictures of sonogram pictures of my daughter from 8 weeks on. 8 weeks on, I have all these pictures. And then I've got the imaging that shows me her face, and I can take that image, that 4D, they call it a 4D image, and I can put it next to her picture as a baby and go, you can tell and recognize. I mean, and you're, you know, we go in at 12 weeks, and she's waving to me. Like, she's wiggling her arm at 12 weeks.
Wow.
And I remember that, and I'm here, you know, I have her heartbeat saved on my phone still from the first time we went, before we even had this little sonogram of her looking like a peanut. Mm-hmm. We had this heartbeat. Right. That I said, and I took that file and I saved it, and I've got it saved in I don't know how many places, because I would never want to lose that. And to say that that's not a person from so early on is just wrong. And anyone who takes any time to look into it or has been through a pregnancy knows that it's a person, knows that it's not a cluster of cells, knows that the science does not back up the rhetoric that has been used for, you know, 50 years since Roe v. Right. Wade.
Well, and if it's not a person, then when does it become a person? And that becomes this fluid area wherein it is a slippery slope. So if the child is not a person at the point of conception, and we acknowledge a very early stage human being, but a human being nonetheless, but if the child is not a person at that point in time, then what sort of markers do we have to indicate and determine when the child has reached personhood?
Well, some will say when the baby's viable outside of the womb. And you say, okay, using that argument, so 20 weeks is on the line, but let's say 30 weeks. There are babies that are born at 30, 32 weeks, 36 weeks, and are totally viable. Basically, once you hit the third trimester, they're pretty much just gaining weight and then some lung development. But let's say you're at the point the lungs are developed. If that baby was born, that baby would not survive. A 40-week baby born is not able to survive on its own. So if that's your argument, if it's when a baby is able to survive on their own, if it's okay at 39 weeks, it's okay at 41 weeks when the baby's been around for a week. If it's okay at 39 weeks, it's okay at, you know, when the baby's about to be a one-year-old. I mean, if you go and follow that argument, or going back to the, was it Sweden that's eliminated?
I think it is.
It's one of the Netherlands countries. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But so they're lauding, you know, this Down syndrome eradication. That's a eugenics program. That's what it is.
Yep.
That's the same type of program that North Carolina is paying out settlements to people for neutering them in the 70s. Because they were deemed too dumb to have a baby. Yeah. Or for other reasons. That's the same program that we went to a war in the late 1930s, World War II, over a eugenics program. The Holocaust, it was ultimately a eugenics program. And so now people are bragging about this program. And in the Holocaust, they were going after the people of subpar intelligence, as well as other groups, you know, the Jews and that sort of thing. But it was ultimately the goal of making the human race stronger,
mm-hmm.
making it better. And that's what the eugenics program is. And that's what
social Darwinism does. You know, it is about achieving this superior human race by any means necessary. And like you've noted and drawn the parallels between the history of eugenics and what we're seeing nowadays, in the Netherlands, yep, it's Down syndrome that is attempting to be eradicated. here in the United States, the argument for abortion is if your child is going to be born into poverty or is not wanted. You know, it's still eradicating a group of people based on
hardship for yourself, for one.
Right. And my proposition in the article at the end of it is to ask North Carolinians, what can we do to create a society where the mother and the child feel supported and where we are lifting up families? So we're encouraging marriage. We're encouraging the father to step up. There are some men that want to step up, and they have been denied that chance to father because the woman decided to have an abortion, or sometimes the tables are switched, and there's young ladies that feel pressured into abortions by the fathers or their own parents. But we as a society, there's got to be a change there as well. So, you know, we could have the best policies and best pro-life policies around, but there still has to be a heart change within society. So yesterday I visited Gateway Campus, which I cite in the article, and that is a pregnancy resource center, and they exist to help young mothers and those just have found themselves in unplanned pregnancies. And they walk with the mother through these difficulties, because in a society that embraces abortion and pushes that as the best opportunity for you to get ahead in life, it is difficult for, let's say, a 17-year-old girl who finds herself pregnant. It's difficult for her to say no to abortion when everybody else is telling her she should say yes to it. So people like Gateway are there to walk these women through this and let them know that they are strong enough to do this and that there are support networks for them. But in this article, I also talk about the pain that abortion has caused. There was one girl in particular. Her name was Kristen, and she had an abortion back in 2014. And the emotional devastation that she experienced after this abortion it took her 3 years to recover from that. And she said she would just sob and cry and couldn't get the sound of the suction out of her mind. And we don't focus enough on that as well, the pain that abortion leaves on the hearts and minds of these women and sometimes the bodies. I know a woman personally who ended up sterile after having, I think she had two or three abortions and never was able to conceive children after that again. So there are so many things wrong with this legislation, and it is taking for granted information that has been fed to them by the pro-abortion lobby. And North Carolinians need to know the truth about this and ask their legislators, why did you support this? What about this do you feel was helpful to society or protecting of society's most vulnerable?
Right. And I just kind of jumping back to, you know, changing the way we think as a society. So this is something that, you know, my daughter is about to turn two. So I'm a long ways off of this. But I've quarterback, whatever, you know, thought about this. But it's like a baby's never a bad thing. It's kind of the way I look at it. Like, you know, there are babies that have my accident. There are inconvenient times mm-hmm. to have a baby. You know, when you're young, when you're in college, when you're in high school, God forbid. You know, but there are a baby's still never a bad thing. And if you go into it with that mindset, then you'll always, I think, come out on the other side better. And I think that the mother and the baby will come out on the other side better. So would I, if my daughter was 16 and got pregnant or 18 and got pregnant, be upset? I'd, you know, there would be naturally be some sort of mourning for what could have been in the easier path to get where, you know, the potential for my daughter is. But that doesn't make the baby a bad thing. It's not the baby's fault for sure. But it's if you don't even approach it from a fault standpoint and go, okay, here's where we are. Where do we go from here? And I think that's a system where hopefully my daughter or anyone's daughter who goes through this would feel supported and know that it can be done. You can get through this and come out on the other side okay.
Yep. That's such a good, important point, is that instead of turning our perspective to the child's presence as being something that is harmful and absolutely inconvenient, if we just look at the situation, say, yes, this is going to be difficult. I think first off, we can help other young people understand that it is best to wait till marriage to have children. But also those women that do find themselves in this situation, knowing you're stronger than you think. And there are people that will support you in this, and you're not going to be alone in this. And I think that's a fear for young women, though, if they find themselves in a pregnancy that's not planned. Maybe the father left. Maybe they don't even really know the father. Maybe they were raped. There needs to be a community there, which we talked about civil society, I think a few months back, and the importance of community. And this is one area that speaks to that louder than I think anything else, is the high rate of teen pregnancies and unwed childbirths, and the importance of civil society coming around these women and enabling them to be the mothers that they can be, that they should be, but also simultaneously approaching future generations like sex education with the encouragement that they wait till marriage to have children. I heard an acronym. I was talking to someone last week, and they use this acronym called DESC. I don't know if you've heard of it, but this is one way to virtually ensure that you do not end up in poverty later on in life. And the D stands for diploma, get a high school diploma. E stands for education. So go ahead and, or employment, I'm sorry, diploma, employment. So have a steady job. S, have a spouse. And then K, have kids. So if you do it in that order, doesn't mean you have to have a spouse and get married and have kids. But if you are going to have kids, have a spouse first. And that, I mean, even if you don't agree with that on the moral grounds of it, which I think there's a case to be made for the moral grounds of doing it that way. But even if you don't agree with that, the studies bear out that will definitely set you up for a much greater likelihood for success. I think it's like 98% likelihood that you're not going to live in poverty if you follow it in that order.
Right. And that just makes sense. I mean, and that's the model that I followed it and know about this acronym, but you know, I got my high school diploma, I got my college diploma, I got out, I got a job. I didn't propose till I got a job. After that, you know, we had my daughter who's going to celebrate her 2-year-old birthday next month.
Yeah,
so I followed along the plan I didn't know about.
Good job. Same here. Well, and so nowadays, though, with identity politics and just like full swing, people would say that's wrong to you know, put that forth as an ideal. But the statistics, the data bear it out. I mean, I don't know. People say that's maybe narrow-minded to have that sort of order to one's life. But I say, look, if you know that that's going to be the best guarantee for your child's long-term success, then why not support it? I mean, even if you're just looking at it empirically, support it, because you know that that's going to help guarantee your child and maybe your grandchildren have a steady, safe, stable home. And there's so much good that can come from that, because then, you know, you talk about unwanted children being a burden on society. Well, if you encourage your kids to follow this, there's a greater likelihood that they won't be a quote-unquote burden on society. I don't advocate for that term, but that is the term that the left likes to use sometimes. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, again, thank you for coming on the show and talking with us about your latest article. It's on ncivitas.org, and it's part of the Toxic Agenda series that's coming out, and people should go there and read that one, read Brian's on Medicaid reform, and then come back looking for the next ones.
Yep, sounds good, Matt. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, thank you to Brooke for coming on the show and sharing her article with us and talking with us about the topic, you know, of abortion. It's a sticky topic, and a lot of people don't want to get into it, and the willingness she has to come on the show and address that topic is something we really value here, and we also value your opinion. So go on Facebook and Twitter, What Matters NC. Let us know what you think about that segment, and we'll catch you next time.